From Spark and Anvil and Gambit Tales, this is Vale and Vow, in Chapter 1 of the Gambit Tales cast. This drama uses an AI-generated voice, voiced via Gemini 2.5.
The first thing to know about Vale and Vow is that they always enter a room together, and they always enter in the same order. Vale first, half a step ahead. Vow second, half a step behind. They do not announce it. They do not even seem to think about it. They simply walk in like that, the way two horses pull a cart in step, and the door of the academy training hall opens and closes once for both of them. A class of 9 children watches them come in. The sisters are tall and thin and identical, down to the small gray clasps in their hair. They are wearing matching dark green tunics. Vale's clasp on the left, Vow's on the right. That is the only way the children will, by the end of the kit, learn to tell them apart. They walk to the front of the hall and stop in front of a long wooden practice table. On the table, somebody has set up a chessboard with 3 pieces, a white rook on A1, a black queen in the middle of the file on A4, a black king at the back on A8. Vale looks at the board. Vow looks at the board. Neither of them speaks for almost 10 seconds. The children, who do not yet know the sisters' patterns, wait politely at first, then more interested. They have not seen this particular silence before. Then Vale says, in a voice barely above a breath, "The queen is in the way." And Vow says, in a voice that carries cleanly to the back of the hall without seeming raised, "But the queen is the way." She points very slowly at the rook. She traces a line up the file with her finger, past the queen, past the empty squares behind it, all the way to the king. "The rook," Vow says, "is looking at the queen. The queen is in the way. But the rook is also looking, through her, at the king. The queen is the defender of the king. The queen is also the piece in front of the king. If the queen ever moves," and Vale mirrors the motion, lifting the queen off the board very gently, "the rook is already attacking the king. The rook does not have to do anything. The rook is already there." She puts the queen back. The children stare at the position. "This," Vale whispers, "is the X-ray. This is our shot." The room is so still that a child near the back asks, almost involuntarily, "Do you always speak like that?" "Yes," says Vale. "Always," says Vow. A few children laugh, quietly, the way you laugh in a chapel. The sisters do not mind. They have been getting that laugh for 8 years.
They were born in a village called Cresswell on the western side of the kingdom, 11 minutes apart. Their real names are written on the village rolls, but the rolls were kept in a wooden box that flooded one spring, and after the flood, nobody could read the rolls. And after that, nobody could quite remember what the sisters were originally called. Their mother had been calling them Vale and Vow since they were very small. The names had stuck, the way names stick when they are exactly right. Vale for the older sister, the one who was always at the front of the room, Vow for the younger, the one whose voice carried across the fields. The girls did not, even as small children, mind the names. They had not been given a chance to mind anything else. Their mother was a quiet woman who had been a hunter in her younger years before she settled in Cresswell to raise the twins. Their father is not in this chapter. He died when the sisters were 2. The sisters do not remember him. Their mother carried the whole family on her shoulders. She is, you should know, an exceptionally good parent. She is not a character in this chapter, but she is the reason the chapter is possible. She started teaching them to shoot when they were 7. She had grown up shooting. She did not think there was anything strange about teaching her daughters. She had 2 old U-bows and a sheaf of straight arrows that she had fletched herself. And she walked the sisters into the field behind the barn one autumn afternoon and showed them how to knock and draw and release. Vale was very good very quickly. By the end of the first month, she was placing arrows in straw butts at 30 paces. By the end of 6 months, 60. By the end of the year, she was shooting better than children twice her age and was the topic of conversation at every harvest gathering Cresswell held. Vow was, for the first 2 years, terrible. She could not, at age 9, consistently hit a target at 20 paces. Her arrows wobbled. Her grip was inconsistent. She drew the bow correctly and aimed correctly and released correctly, and the arrows still seemed to find their own routes through the air. Their mother said nothing. Their mother kept handing her arrows. Vow kept practicing. She practiced badly, but she practiced every day. By the autumn the sisters turned 10, Vow had begun to wonder, privately, whether she was simply not made for it.
What happened next changed both their careers. They were practicing together in the field behind the barn. Vale was at the front of the field, near the targets, perhaps 15 paces from the closest butt. Val was at the back of the field, 10 paces behind her sister, both of them aiming at the same straw butt. Vale drew her bow. She held the draw for a long moment, the way she always did. Then she released. The arrow struck the butt cleanly, 3 fingers from the center. As Vale lowered her bow, Val, who had been about to take her own shot, looked along the line her sister had just shot. She saw very clearly the path the arrow had taken. She saw the air the arrow had moved through. She saw, almost as a visible thing, the line hanging in the field between her sister's bow and the butt. She thought very simply, "Oh, that's the line." She raised her bow. She drew. She aimed, not at the target itself, at the line her sister had drawn for her. She released. Her arrow followed Vale's arrow into the butt, closer to the center. It struck almost exactly where Vale's arrow had struck. Val had, for the first time in her life, hit a target at 20 paces. She did it again the next shot, and the next. When she shot without Vale in front of her, her aim was, again, poor. But when Vale was in front of her, when Vale had just shot and just shown her the line, Val could place her own arrow along that line as if she were tracing it with her finger. The sisters figured it out within a week. Vale shot first. She opened the line. Val shot second. She followed it through. And her arrow, because Vale's arrow had cleared the air ahead of it, kept going. Val's arrow sometimes passed within inches of Vale's standing shoulder. Vale never flinched. She trusted her sister completely. By their 11th birthday, the sisters could put 2 arrows through the same straw butt on successive heartbeats, one after the other, almost touching. Their mother watched this and said quietly from the edge of the field, "Vale opens. Vow finishes." The phrase stuck.
They first introduced themselves with it when they were 15 at the Kingdom's archery trial in the capital. They stood in front of the judges, side by side, Vale half a step ahead. Vow said in her carrying voice, "My sister opens, I finish. We are Vale and Vow." They won the trial. They were the first sister pair to do so. The judges were uncertain what to do with them. The Kingdom's military was politely interested, but ultimately confused. There was no place in a standard infantry line for 2 archers who shot best in series. The trial judges spent a long week debating it. The sisters waited in a small guest house behind the trial grounds, drinking weak tea and not minding the wait. A scout for the chess academy, passing through the capital on other business, heard about them in a tavern. He had been at the academy for 10 years. He understood immediately what the sisters were. He sent word to the academy master. The academy master, who had been searching for someone to teach the X-ray pattern for almost a decade, the pattern where a piece threatens another piece through a third piece in between, sent for them within the week. He met them at the academy gates himself. He brought them into a quiet upper classroom and set up a chessboard. A rook on A1, a black queen on A4, a black king on A8. The sisters had never played chess. The academy master explained the rules, briefly. They understood quickly. They had practiced in series for 8 years. They understood lines. The academy master pointed at the rook. He pointed at the queen. He pointed at the king. He said, "The rook is attacking the king. The queen is in the way, but the rook does not have to move the queen. The threat passes through her. This is called the X-ray." Vow said immediately, "That's our shot." Vale nodded. "I open, she finishes." The academy master hired them within the hour.
They have been teaching at the academy for 8 years.
This afternoon, after their lesson, they stay behind in the training hall to stack the practice pieces back into their wooden boxes. Vale at the front, Vow at the back. The hall is empty except for the two of them, and in the doorway at the back, a single small figure, Sir Pinwell, leaning on the doorframe in his quiet way, watching them work. He has been watching them for the entire lesson. They had known he was there. They always know. He clears his throat. They both look up. I have, he says, slowly, been thinking about the line, about what you do. Yes, says Vale. And, says Val. Pinwell considers his words. He always considers his words. He says after a long pause, I hold the row. I have always held the row. I have always been very sure that the row was, in its way, real. That a piece in the row was a piece in the way of something. That a piece between two others was between them. Yes, says Vale, again. And then you appeared, Pinwell says, and you taught me a pattern that pretends, or perhaps does not pretend, perhaps it is true, that the row is not in the way of anything, that the threat goes through the row, that the piece between the two others is also somehow only the front of a longer threat that has not stopped. The sisters say nothing. They are listening. I have, Pinwell says, written a footnote to myself about this. The footnote says, I will think about this. I am still thinking. I wanted you to know. Vale smiles, a very small smile, barely more than a softening of the eyes. Don't think about it too hard, sir, Vow says, gently. Her voice is calmer than usual, almost as quiet as her sister's. We just go through. Pinwell nods. He pushes off the doorframe. He turns to go. At the door, he pauses, looks back over his shoulder, and says without ceremony, The lesson was clean today, both of you. He walks out. The sisters stand still in the empty hall for a long moment. Then Vale looks at her sister and says, almost too softly to hear, He saw us. Vow nods. He saw us. And a warm, quiet gladness settles over both sisters, the deep, steady happiness of being truly noticed by someone who's noticing you have come to trust. They go back to packing the pieces away, close and content, in step as always.
You've been listening to a Spark and Anvil chapter, written by the Spark and Anvil writing team for ages 9 to 14. Spark and Anvil is a 501c3 public charity. Apps stay free forever. Curriculum aligned to Vale and Vow. Released under Creative Commons BY-NC-SA 4.0 for educational reuse. Visit Spark and Anvil for the full transcript.